To start this evening, we're going to go right to that. A business that's 170 years old. Tommy Clark's Barbers was established in Tullamore in 1862. And it really, you know, there's not too many businesses out there that are that old. Of course, it's in the area of hairdressing and barbers. So something, I suppose, that has been an essential service all along. And who can remember? I mean, who can remember? Who can forget what it was like through all those lockdowns? And I, like so many men out there, eventually had to kind of give in and get the home cut. Did it myself. My wife tried. I cut my father's hair. I cut my brother's hair. I cut my father-in-law's hair. We still talk, but I'm a bit surprised at that. But thankfully, there's always somebody to rescue you and correct damage that was done. And a lot of us would have ended up actually in Tommy Clark's. I'm delighted to be joined now by David Feely. And David has been a barber in Clark's for about 13 years now. And as of 1st of July, has taken over ownership of the business. And David, you're very welcome to Taking Care of Business.
Thanks a million, Roland. Thanks for having me on the show.
How does it feel to take the helm of a 170-year-old business? That's a big heritage.
Yeah, it sure is. It's very, very exciting. Being like one of Ireland's, if not Ireland's, oldest barbershops, it's very exciting adventure. I'm really looking forward to getting stuck in now.
And when it came to looking at taking it over, was it a long process? Was it something that you always felt you were going to have a go at, or how did it come about?
Well, I didn't know really. At one stage, I always wanted to have my own barbershop at some stage or another. And I was talking to Tommy and his sister Maura during the pandemic, and it was pretty straightforward from that. Then we made an agreement, and yeah, they were happy. I was happy, so it's great.
So you're 13 years a barber yourself.
Yeah.
When did you first get into it, and what was it that got you excited about being a barber in the first place?
Yeah, well, my mum was a hairdresser in Tullamore for years, and I started by, I'd done actually a bit of work experience in Clark's when I was doing my Leaving Cert. And that took me then on to Knights of the Green Barbers up in Dublin, where I studied and trained there. And then I finished off my training then later on in Clark's.
Because your parents, of course, have a big business history in Tullamore too.
Yeah, my mum and dad, they would have had their own business on Patrick Street there, where I think it's Joe Sullivan's there now, the camera place. My dad had a butcher shop below, and then my mum had a hairdresser's up above it. She would have trained with Frank Hessian, who'd be a big name in the hairdressing industry in Ireland and Dublin and that.
170 years, as we said, it's very unique. Ireland's oldest barber, likely, but it's in quite a unique part of Tullamore, indeed in any high street, because we're just discussing off air there. You've got Tommy Clark's, beside it you've got the famous Clunan's, of course, people will be very familiar with Brian from Mr. Fix-It on a Wednesday morning.
Yeah, of course.
Beside that, Galvin's for Men, and you've also got Dolan's Pharmacy, businesses that are all probably over the century. It's incredible.
Yeah, it's crazy. For the one street, it's really... it's incredible, like, you know, it's the heart of Tullamore, and they're all fantastic businesses we all use day to day. As I said, Clunan's, you have Galvin's, you have Dolan's, William Street in general. I think it's there's a lot of prosperity and stuff happening there. It's getting busier. And
it's almost going against the argument we've been having for a long time about the future of our town centres, like when you see business like that established and trading so well.
Yeah.
So the draw was there for you then. You've got that kind of the family history. You've got a great location too.
Yeah.
Was there any time you felt this is too big a cherry to bite now, or I'm going to pull back from this, or was it just when the opportunity presents, just go for it?
Yeah. Look, I didn't really have any doubts once the opportunity presented itself. I was delighted to take it on. I suppose, look, you'd be scratching your head and thinking of different ways of doing things and stuff like that, but I was never in doubt that I wanted to do this, and I'm really excited now about taking it on in the future.
And you officially opened on launched on the 1st of July as well. You had plenty of balloons about there, of course.
Yeah.
There was great buzz around the town. It was the day before the minor final was coming up too.
Correct, yeah.
And when we speak of Offaly minor hurling, it brings back into just a headline I saw recently, and this is the most important question I'm going to put you this evening.
Right.
Mullets are back, right?
They're back.
What's your view on the mullet as a barber? I know you've got to do what the customer wants, but what's causing the mullet to become the
Cormac Egan and Killian Martin have a lot to answer for anyway with bringing the mullets back. Yeah, a lot of young lads getting back into them. Look, sure, it's kind of like any haircut. Looks great on some lads and not so great on other lads. But no, I enjoy doing them. And boy, also, there's a bit of me enjoys taking them off as well.
The mammy's dragging people in, you're getting
rid of.
No, it is. It's fascinating. But I suppose that's the one thing, like I said at the start, like hairdressing and barbering, it's been around forever. It will be around forever, but the styles change.
Yeah.
What's it like then trying to adapt to that and work on the latest? Like, how does a barber keep themselves, you know, upskilled with the latest?
Yeah, well, look, there's lots of different courses you can do. You can pick up, you're always changing in barbering, and as you said, styles are changing, and you have to keep up to date with the latest cuts and techniques. And every day you can learn something new, you know. So that's really it, yeah.
And do you get those, you know, if somebody comes in and says, oh, this is what I want, and
yeah,
you kind of go, or you have to advise them that it mightn't suit you? Does that happen, or is the
no? Yeah, it does happen. You have some kids coming in that might have a picture of Neymar or Cristiano Ronaldo or something, and they're it's not easy. But you have to try and do what they want, you know, and keep once they're happy going out the door. That's our main thing.
Of course, the pandemic, like for so many businesses, had to be tough for barbers, particularly with so long closed. I know the effect on a lot of us was devastating when we had to do the home cuts, but to go so long with the shops closed, maybe wondering whether they're going to get back open, surely a tough time. But positives have come from the pandemic too. I mean, a lot of barber shops now have gone digital, and you can now go online with an app and book your haircut. How has that been?
Yeah, we've an app now, Booksy, and we got it in initially at the start of when we were the reopening, and it's worked really well for us. So we've continued the use of that, and we've also brought back in our walk-in system as well. So we've both gone, which is great. Like, and we were conscious of not excluding some of the older customers, so they can book via the phone or via the app itself, or like that walk in as well. So we have it open for everyone. That's what we really want to. Clark's is always a barbershop for everyone, and we really want to maintain that and keep that going. You know, you come down with the lads, and it's.
Yeah, I suppose I'm like a lot of people there that, you know, there's at least three generations of my family that go in there at present. And I suppose that in itself is unique. And I'm sure you see that with loads of families.
It's crazy. Like you'd hear some guys there and they'd be maybe in their 70s and 80s and they'd be saying like they got their first haircut in there. Like, you know, it's really very unique. And that's what makes it so unique than other barbershops, you know, that it's there so long and it has so much history in it. Like I said, the Harriers was founded there. There was GA meetings there throughout the years. It's just loads of history.
And I'd say lots of people listening would be familiar with Tommy Clark himself in particular. And, you know, really are. You're filling big shoes there.
Filling big shoes is right. If I can do as well as Tommy done, I would be a very, very happy man. So hopefully, anyway, I have his wishes and his blessings. So hopefully I can do that.
That's fantastic. So you've the gents barbers downstairs, and there is a ladies hairdresser
upstairs
too.
We've gents downstairs and ladies salon upstairs. We've a couple of exciting things in place for the. I'm in talks at the minute with James O'Connor there from fititout.ie, and we're looking at doing some bits downstairs. I don't want to give away too much, but so we've that. Then we're in talks with a couple of people as well about bringing out our own products and stuff like that. So.
Exciting times ahead. Look at the brand extension. James, of course, was a tradesperson of the year in the Midlands 103 Customer Service Awards last week. And again, a man who's left a fantastic mark on so many shops around Tullamore at the minute. So,
absolutely.
Exciting times ahead.
Yeah.
Not only have you a new business, there's a new baby, there's a wedding looming towards the end of the year. So
there is, yeah. Doing it all the one year. Yeah, very busy.
As they always say, if you want something done, ask a busy person. But David, for now, lots of texts coming in there as well. People wishing you all the very best in Clark's. And
that's great.
Usually fond memories and lots of happy customers there too. So
yeah,
David Philippe, that's the new owner of Tommy Clark's Barbershop, a business that has been around since 1862, 170 years. That's no small feat. David, all the very best.
Ronan, thank you so much.
Stay tuned. After break, we're going to have a check-in on the property market, what's happening out there with residential and commercial property. And then around 7:30, you're going to meet almost, I'm going to call them Mullingar's version of Willy Wonka. A new shop has opened up there, bringing a unique experience, unique gifting ideas. and it's backed up by two fantastic people. You'll meet them at around 7:30 this evening. Lots more to come here on Taking Care of Business. Don't go anywhere. Coming up right in the here and now and looking at matters close to home too, we're going to now put our focus on the property sector and look at what the latest trends are in the residential and commercial property market. Before acknowledging a local estate agent who was recently picked up a national award amongst stiff competition. But first, the rate of increase in property prices will ease in coming months. That's according to some industry experts. It follows new figures which show the price of a home increased by 14.4% in the year to May. CSO figures show that this is a slight decline in the 12 months to April when prices went up by 14.5%. CEO of the Institute of Professional Auctioneers and Valuers, Mullingar's Pat Davitt, believes a number of factors will see the rate of increases ease.
I expect the increase that they are going to get less and less as Corden as the year progresses. I think there is, which is a good sign, there is a little bit more stock coming on the market. And you see from the figures there that there is new first-time buyers have in May. There's been 1,213 sales, first-time buyers, and there was only 922 in 2021, which is up a considerable amount.
My guest in studio is Philip Kelly of DNG Kelly Duncan in Tullamore. Philip, some of the headlines, you know, over the last day or two, house prices up 9.5%, but surge is beginning to slow, according to daft.ie. What are you seeing out there yourself?
Hi, Ronan, and thanks for having me on. We're seeing growth rates moderating. We have it, Paul Murgatroyd, who's a director of research in DNG, up to year to June 2022, 12.5% growth compared to the year to December 2021 was 14.2% growth. So we're just seeing a slight moderation into growth. It's still growth, but it's moderating. And to be honest, we welcome it. It's unsustainable to see growth rates at, you know, 15%, 20%. It's just, so we'd rather see nice, steady growth going forward, you know.
I think it's the last thing that anybody trying to buy a house wanted when you see those huge jumps that seem to come, because for so long, for a lot of people, it looked like the houses might never come back to the value they had during the boom. And then, you know, then it was slowly eking its way, and then these jumps have been significant. Is it just the market kind of finding its rightful place, or is it signs that people are a bit scared by what may be coming down the tracks?
I think it's finding its right place. We've had 10 years of no construction in Ireland from sort of 2008 up to 2018, certainly down in the Midlands. And we're really paying for the lack of supply in the marketplace. There's a little bit of the market catching up to that at the moment. There's a number of new developments in Tullamore. Indeed, we're involved in the Redwood development on the Tower Road, which is selling very, very well. We're sold out in phase one and almost there in phase two, and hoping to launch phase three in the coming weeks. But the second-hand stock, there's a lot of it coming to the market. You have a lot of people that were effectively accidental landlords over the last number of years, and they've seen that their houses are back now, and there's no negative. They're sort of in positive territory as regards selling them. So we're seeing a lot of those accidental landlords coming to the market at the moment as well, and people getting out of the private rental sector as well.
Are we likely to see people just then not investing in properties? I mean, certainly for 15, 20 years in this country, you had to have a second property rented if you were anybody. Like, is that something that is slowly disappearing? Is it just not incentivized enough for people anymore?
I think there's a new type of buyer out there, and it's all being done through pensions. It's a much more tax efficient way of investing in property, where you have no capital gains tax effectively. Your income isn't taxed. And it's probably a better way of owning property personally. So we're definitely seeing an awful lot of people exiting more than going into it. But property is always a safe place too. So there's a lot of cash out there, and there's a lot of people looking to invest at the same time.
Of course, supply, as you mentioned, is always an issue. And you know, there's some developments around Tullamore and across the Midlands in particular that are beginning to try to meet some of the demand that's out there. Yet, you know, we see, like, between COVID, material prices, inflation in construction sector, there hasn't apparently been money in building houses in quite a while in this country. And you add to that as well, you know, everything else that's happening out there kind of globally. Are we likely to ever get, do you think, to have enough housing units available for people? And has that in turn maybe made people buy up secondhand properties that maybe before this they may not have been interested in?
I think the BER shares that were introduced in sort of 2009 have played a big factor in sort of the new stock that's out there, and government legislation as regards kind of Part L compliance, and we see like there's definitely a two-tier property structure out there where your new prices, your new builds, your A-rated houses are getting 70,000-80,000 more than your equivalent older stock from 2007, 2006 and 7. And but they're definitely much more affordable, but obviously everyone wants the new shiny product, but it's just the affordability is the big issue on a lot of it at the moment.
And is that holding through kind of quite consistently, that kind of gap between the A-rated? Because I'd say people listening are probably a bit sceptical that surely if there's just a high demand, a property in the right location in the right town is a property, like, so is, would you not just go and buy it? Are people swayed by the potentially maybe 50 or 100,000 euro bill that could come for retrofitting and upgrading?
And that's the big problem. The retrofit cost is, you know, up to 100,000 on a three-bed semi to get it to an A-rated house, if you can get it to an A-rated house. There are deep retrofits grants available there for it, but that is definitely a big issue. But the second-hand stock, we're seeing purely if people are looking at it, it's affordability issues, but there's great incentives there for first-time buyers as well. You have the Help to Buy scheme, which is, you know, at the moment it's an enhanced Help to Buy scheme, so someone can get 30,000 euro effectively off a government. It's up to a maximum of 30,000 euros or 10% of the purchase price of the property. So it's definitely a big incentive.
It's all, I think you make an important point there too, that not all houses can be retrofitted successfully to make it up to a certain standard, but not the A standard too. But you know, again, 2 weeks ago we see figures from the CSO showing that the population in the Midlands is growing and growing steadily. I mean, Portlaoise was regularly being talked about as the fastest growing town in Ireland, but it now transpires that most towns are kind of following hot on its heels as well. Is there a big challenge coming, do you think, in terms of how we deliver these housing units? And, you know, any, have you got any kind of commentary on, like, even the planning process that has often been thrown out there as being one of the biggest blockers of decent large scale development?
Yeah, it's I think Tullamore, to be fair, at the moment is facing big issues. Like, there's a new development plan in Offaly, and there has been a significant amount of lands that have been dezoned or put into a strategic residential reserve, which effectively means that a lot of these lands can't be developed for the duration of the next development plan. So the amount of land that we have to build on is definitely an awful lot smaller than it was in the last development plan. And the process of getting from a green field to actually building is a number of years. You know, it's There's huge challenges there, and then you have all infrastructural challenges, water, ESB, that create all these backlogs as well. And of course, Tullamore has become very popular with the work from home, the hybrid work from home models. We've seen an awful lot of people coming back to Tullamore. Like, as a town, it has an awful lot to offer with the new streets, the new town square, the art centre coming through, 15 trains a day to Dublin. Like, it just has so much to offer, like, and access to the M6. There's just so much there for people to come in.
And even the recent Offaly Jobs Fair, I mean, they were predicting that they'd have 500 jobs on offer on the day, and I think two companies alone almost met that target. Like, so it goes to show the scale of the challenge that is ahead. From a commercial property point of view, what way is the town performing? I know the business park where the station is located, if you go back 5-10 years, there was a lot of vacant units. There's none anymore at the minute. So how's commercial property performing around Tullamore in the Midlands?
Yeah, it's performing quite well. It's and again, like, if you go back a number of years, these units up here were being sold at way less than the cost of construction, and that's still happening today on a lot of these type units. But yeah, a lot of units are being filled at the moment, even in the town centre. And again, you take the retail park up here, or the park up here acts itself. It's there's an awful lot of units filled again. So there's plenty of commercial activity in the town.
And any indications that maybe somebody who previously would have considered being that small accidental landlord, or maybe looking at a small property as a rental, are people being swayed by commercial property looking investing, or is that again still with bigger investment funds?
Yes, you do see that. An awful lot of people will look at going into the commercial aspect of it, because you tend to have a longer lease, one tenant, you don't have to look at the compliance with the Residential Tenancies Board. So there's an awful lot of people who look at taking a commercial property and renting it out for a 10, 15, 20 year term to one tenant, and you're not dealing with any issues with the building. You let it on a fully repairable and insurable lease, and the tenant is responsible for the property. So yeah, there's definitely an element of that, and we've seen a lot of that even on the main street in Tullamore. You had the multi-unit developments up there with the retail on the ground floor. A lot of people have taken those over, taken apartments or so. Yeah.
So there is opportunities there for people if they are looking, investing as well. We're going to take it back to kind of day-to-day operations as well, of course, with DNG Kelly Duncan in Tullamore. You were recently named as the 2021 DNG Medium Branch of the Year at the recent National Conference. Congratulations.
Thanks very much, Ronan. Yeah, thank you.
What did you have to do to win that? What's involved and what's a medium branch?
I presume it's size rather than diameter. Yes. I think it's based on staff numbers. So a small branch was 1 to 3, medium was 3 to 5, and then a large branch was 5 or more. So we fit into the category of a medium branch. And it was an applications process, and we were shortlisted in December, and then we were awarded the prize at the DNG annual conference just a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, it's nice to collect a little bit of silverware and a bit of recognition for what you do as well. So
yeah, especially and more so for the staff, because like they're the ones that are in there on a daily basis, like dealing with all of sorting out diaries and making appointments, etc., and they're at the coalface on a daily basis. So it's great to see Fiona, Aisling and Pascal being rewarded for as well. And I think that's and it's a great recognition as well for the level of service that we provide in the town. And it's nice to be able to go out and talk to people saying that we've won this award for the levels of service that we provide. So it is, we're delighted with it, to be honest with you. Yeah.
From an operational point of view, like any sector, you've met challenges during lockdowns and kind of pandemic restrictions. A lot of viewing started happening online as well. Has that been retained, or what kind of points have you taken during the pandemic and that are still part of the everyday business now?
It definitely had an impact. And if you looked at a lot of the commentators in sort of March 2020, we were looking at price decreases of 15% and 20%. And in actual fact, the total opposite happened. And you were looking at doing virtual viewings and stuff. And we had kind of pivoted then towards technology. We were doing 3D virtual tours and more video tours. Gone a little bit away from it, to be honest with you, and back to the traditional viewings. We haven't done so on new homes. On the new home aspect of it, we haven't gone and just opened on a Sunday for 2 hours or 4 hours and flood the place with 50 people. You get a far more understanding of a customer when you do a private viewing with someone, so you know if they've something to sell, if they're mortgage approved. You never get that if you just flood the place with 50 or 100 people. So we haven't gone back to that on the new homes. It remains to be seen whether we do it in phase 3 of Redwood, but certainly at the moment we've been just doing private viewings and gone a little bit away from the virtual tours, kind of back to doing short videos for TikTok and Facebook and bits and pieces like that.
Really embracing the social media and all the hashtags and handles and that.
Exactly. Yeah.
I know we had Pat Davitt there just leading off with that piece. The IPAV annual conference was on last Friday. Pat has been on the show in the past speaking about things like the seller's legal pack and that type of stuff. Industry wise, where are you with that? Is that now in place or?
No, not as of yet. It's up in front of the Oireachtas, and I think they're getting a lot of pushback from the legal profession on it. But it's certainly something Pat is a big proponent of, and it makes much more sense that if someone decides to put a property in the market, that all of the legal aspects of it are dealt with before it goes on the market. We find more and more often that you go to sell a property and then something crops up in the background that should have been dealt with at the very start. It's very frustrating from our point of view. It's very frustrating from a purchaser point of view. And it's also very frustrating from a vendor's point of view as well. So it would be lovely to see it introduced and to have that pack initially, you know.
And again, if the potential buyers then are ahead of it as well and they've got all the approval or the approval in principle for the loans as well, it kind of should expedite a process that otherwise can take way too long. But usually it's a myriad of factors that are causing that. So anything else jump out from the conference on Friday that maybe from a market perspective that is worth looking at? Any innovations, any kind of trends that are worth commenting on?
No, there are a lot of speakers over from the States, and it was interesting to hear like the fluctuations in pricing over there. James Kenny was talking, and he was talking about Florida pricing last year went up by 48% in 1 year. He's based in Chicago, and he'd seen a dip in pricing of 40% due to the race wars and a lot of people leaving then for more favourable tax places. But it was generally, the big thing is to trying to get the introduction of the seller's pack. And that was pretty much kind of the big takeaways from it, to be honest with you. And it was the first time that, of course, that the conference had been in person in 2 years. So it's great to kind of get and mingle and talk to your agents all around the country as well. You know?
I was at a sustainability conference in Croke Park last Wednesday. It was a rare treat. Everybody acknowledged us, and it was just brilliant to be back out face to face. Yeah, badly needed overall. But Philip, thank you so much for coming this evening as well and for giving us an update on the residential and commercial property markets. Well done again to yourself and all the team at D&G Kelly Duncan on being awarded the 2021 D&G Medium Branch of the Year Award. Continued success to you all.
Thanks very much, Roland. Thank you. Much appreciated.
So there you are now. There's a bit of an insight into the property market. Hopefully we won't see those price swings like in Florida. And actually, if you think back to about 3-4 weeks ago, David Toohey from Kent was on with me, and he mentioned actually how there's a huge migration of people from kind of California and San Francisco to Texas because there's much more favourable tax conditions. And of course, house prices are gone to the roof there as well. So definitely a bit of truth in what Philip is telling us there. So maybe if you've got property in America, have a look and see what it's worth at the minute or where you should be moving to. Anyway, enough from that for me at the minute. After the break, you're going to meet the owners of Sugar Plum Sweetery. It's a brand new business set up in Mullingar just about 2 weeks ago with a lot of thought and a lot of thinking gone into it, and it looks absolutely fantastic. I can't wait to find out more after this break. David Quirk and Denise Buckley are the owners of the fantastic and award-winning Wholesome Kitchen in Mullingar. And they're not two people to rest and take things easy. They've just opened a brand new business right beside Wholesome Kitchen, and it's called Sugar Plum Sweetery. Now, if you check this out on Facebook or Instagram or whatever social platform you're on, you will be amazed by it. It looks enchanting. And the first person, as I say, if it's a person that comes to mind, is often Willy Wonka. There's magic happening in this store. So to find out more, I'm delighted to be joined by Denise. Denise, what led you to open up the Sugar Plum Sweetery in the first place?
Hi Ronan, how are you? You should definitely work for our PR as well. That was a very good intro to the business as well. So thank you for that. So I suppose it was a concept that we've been looking at for years. Obviously we have set up Wholesome Kitchen, and we wanted to make sure that we established that and spent our time on that. But I suppose I adore chocolates and sweets and all that stuff. So why would you not want to set up your own chocolate shop? So over the years, we've been traveling, whether it was Belgium, we did New York and London, and we just keep seeing things that were inspiring us as well to kind of take the plunge as well, I suppose, and set it up. And then during COVID, we kind of seen a gap in the market as well. So as we know, everyone was trying to send gifts and presents for birthdays through the post, but then there was only limited options, and you had to really kind of think still for what interests people and think outside the box for a gifting destination, a gifting product. So I suppose that's where the brand came to fruition as well. So and that's what created Sugar Plum Sweetery from that.
And for anyone that's listening, like, you know, you've kind of hinted at it already, but it's not just a sweet shop. It goes much deeper than that.
100%. So I suppose kind of formally, and the most important thing to us is we're chocolatiers. So we actually have amazing chocolatiers that work every day making product for the shop. So we have Joji, Lorna and Katie, and they literally just spend their time creating products in our invention room, it's called. So it just means that they're kind of our room for inspiration, that they create different products, they test things, make sure everything's perfect in there as well. So that's kind of the core of our product base. We've chocolate slabs that we have on our counter that we make throughout the day. So when you come in, you can see them on the counter. And then we have kind of novelty thinking outside the box bars like coffee and donuts you can try. They like or not like a crisp bar as well with potato crisps in it. You either love it or hate it as well. So we've tried to make a mix and array of products, and then back to the gifting one as well. So we have like, they're like Louis Vuitton-esque bags that we make with milk chocolate, and they can take up to 45 minutes to make them. And then we hand paint them as well and dust them with gold as well. So everything is all about the attention to detail and the packaging and the branding to make sure that it's a special product that you're giving to somebody.
And of course, the quality of the chocolate is a key factor. So that leads me to my next question. How do you go about finding a chocolatier?
Yeah, exactly. So what we've done is, I suppose, we found the right people, and then we got them trained in terms of chocolate as well. So we got lots of support from some of our Italian colleagues as well. So some of our team as well have kind of developed back into the chocolatier business as well. So we just got them training throughout the world, got them kind of mentors as well, just to make sure. And then I suppose it's just been inspired. There's a lot of chocolatiers in Ireland that are coming through as well, and are investing lots of money into that business as well now. So we've kind of been inspired by them. So it's great that we have that team as well. And hopefully as the business expands, and we'll obviously be launching online mid-August, and that hopefully we'll grow that business and grow our chocolatiers as well.
Because you're saying that the the whole idea, the concept of gifting, you're trying to almost reimagine that and give people viable options for gifts, particularly for somebody who's particularly hard to buy for.
Yeah, totally. So our slogan is memories made sweet. So I suppose when I think about it, it's like giving somebody a product and then like you're actually going to have a memory from that product as well. So that's where the made sweet comes. But I've shared this a couple of times, but it's like that Father's Day and the Mother's Day. It's like when you ask them, what would you like for your birthday or for Father's Day? I have everything. And how do you get something for somebody that has everything? And that's what Sugar Plum Sweetery does really, really well, because who doesn't love getting chocolate as a product? And I suppose Father's Day, that's what I brought to Father's Day, was our chocolate cupcake. It's a bash cake that we hand make, and it's filled with like your favourite jellies, and they get a hammer and they break through. So it's just the excitement with nephews and everyone that was around that day, like 9 of us, and everyone kind of grates around it as well. And it's a moment as well that you remember. So that's kind of where all our product is coming from, that it has to, it's, I suppose it's to create a memory from the product that you're getting.
The research and development part of it must be very exciting and tasty.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah. So we've eaten lots of chocolate from everywhere. So I have a friend that lives in Belgium as well, that we used to spend days just going around eating chocolate. On that as well, and like we went to Harrods before and they've got a chocolate floor, which is unbelievable. So it's like chocolatiers from all around the world, and they all are in this chocolate hall. It's like a whole floor dedicated to it, so it's unbelievable just to see the skill. And it is really a skill, because it's not as simple as you think to kind of create this product. That's what we've learned over the time. So we started making this product from October, and just trying to get the recipes right, and just make sure, like, we want to make sure that you, when you taste the product, that you get what we feel when we made it as well, to make sure that you get the love and all that stuff behind it as well. So lots of work, but really enjoyable, I suppose. I think it's a great kind of brand and product to be in, to be able to kind of make chocolates and be in the sweet business as well.
Is there a particular type of chocolate or flavour that's added to chocolate that Irish people in particular like and would be known for? Or are we kind of pretty much up for anything that has chocolate in it?
Yeah, so I suppose we've spent time in some other countries as well, too. And so I think we like extra milky chocolate, it would be called. So so that's where we have. So when you taste it, well, I put it to the test, because I tested around 40 people. But my nephews on both sides as well, they were the winners. So they knew straight away. They're like, that's my favorite one as well. So we kind of went through different recipes to get it right. But definitely else extra milky, and then a little bit sweeter than other palates in Europe, I would say, would be kind of the winner for the Irish market.
And it's definitely in comparison to the US palate as well. I've often seen, you know, you try these famous US sweets and maybe you're left a little bit kind of underwhelmed, and obviously not as milky, not as sweet too. But as well as the detail and the attention that you've put into, you know, getting the right staff, getting the training, producing the product, you've put massive effort into the actual interior layout. And again, anybody who checks out Sugar Plum Sweetery on the various social media channels will get a glimpse into it. Take us through that process and how you came about coming up with the magnificent interior.
Yeah, so I suppose we had a wish list. So this is where my husband and me are good in terms of business, but then differ in terms of kind of wants and needs. So I would put all my wish list. So I would say, why couldn't you put a candy floss machine beside a make your own bar and beside a fresh popcorn maker as well? Whereas he would say, well, do we need all these things in the same shop? Like, it's only a small shop. But I think creating something like that is amazing. So when you walk in, we've obviously got a chocolate tap as well, and that's how you create your own bar. We do like fresh strawberries with marshmallow, and that's like the freshly poured chocolates on it as well. So everywhere you go, between it's the smell, it's like what you can see visually, it's supposed to just kind of overwhelm your imagination and your expectations as well. So there's always, there's magic at the back of everything. So we've got greeting cards as well, and there's quotes from Walt Disney and Winnie the Pooh. So we just want to, like, I suppose it's like, do you know when you have an idea and something in your head, and it's just to make sure that it goes over to the customer as well. So I hope we've done that well, and that's where the kind of shop came down to. We just spent lots of time working on to make sure it's the right size, to make sure everything is spectacular. So we obviously have a wizard in there that minds our shop overnight. He doesn't have a name yet, but he was made by Richie Clark. So he carved him from a tree trunk first. So like once he arrived, we're like, he is the shop. You know, everything that we put in is perfect. We have a till that was inspired by the Home Alone movie. So it's like a replica till. So from Home Alone, Lost in New York. So everything is nostalgia, but it, I suppose it's to appeal to adults and kids alike as well, to make sure that you kind of remember things, like whether it's from a movie or the sounds, the songs are all John Williams when they say them in the shop. So everything is supposed to kind of surprise and delight you when you come into the shop.
And that's the till that Mr. Duncan had in Home Alone 2 in the toy shop.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so,
that's it.
Yeah.
It's a replica of that. Wow, I think, Pete, that's very significant, very standout, I'd say, for anybody familiar with the film. And I think, like a lot of people too, the kids are now watching it and we're getting reintroduced to the whole generation. So it's you're only open about 2 weeks at this stage.
Yeah, literally 2 weeks. So 2 weeks to tomorrow. So we're delighted. We're super busy. We're really happy. And just a big thanks to all our customers that have come in so far. So I think everyone from Wholesome Kitchen has been so supportive. And it's nice to be able to kind of give them something different as well for us to come in and say hello to us too.
And certainly something very different on the Midlands high streets, maybe even the Irish high streets.
Totally. And I think that's where, especially like you had touched on the shop, that like where else do you go that you can get fresh candy floss in a shop and a chocolate tap, and we make popcorn fresh throughout the day. So like it's something that I haven't seen anywhere in Ireland, and I haven't actually seen on our travels as well. So we wanted to create something really unique. And then also because it kind of helps with online when we launch it, so people understand the brand, because there is so much thought process and kind of heart put into it. We want to make sure that comes through online, and we hope that that's kind of going to help us once we launch.
Well, you certainly have a good test mark in the next couple of weeks when the FLA kicks off to great timing in terms of your opening.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. So we're really looking forward to that. So we're just putting on our chocolatier hats as well. So it's good because I've obviously done training as well. So we've got lots of people and family and friends, which have been super helpful since we've launched. But we have a list of people to call on and emergency people as well in terms of prices to help us make chocolate and just make sure that we're ready for it. But we're super excited for it, and it is great timing, and it's nice to kind of test us as well and just get us prepared for online then. So once the FLA is over, then the focus is online.
Sounds absolutely fantastic. Denise, just give people let them know how they can find out more about you.
Absolutely. So if you follow us, we're on obviously on social media channels, but you'll find us on Sugar Plum Sweetery. That will be obviously online as well on our website, but Instagram is quite good, and then you'll find us on Facebook as well. So if you just follow us on there, and please pop in and say hello to us. So we're still a new business as well, and looking to kind of make sure we make loads of customers happy. So we're on Dominic Street, just beside Wholesome Kitchen. So please pop in if you're ever in Mullingar, or even pop down to us some weekends, and hopefully you really enjoy the shop.
I think there's something there for everybody. But Denise, for now, all the very best with that venture, and looking forward to hearing more about it as the years and months progress.
Perfect. Thank you so much for your time.
And that's Denise Buckley there, co-owner of the Sugar Plum Sweetery and Wholesome Kitchen, along with David Quirk, an award-winning restaurant there in Mullingar too. And there certainly isn't fantastic and beautiful to hear that amount of work and dedication and preparation that goes into creating a new business. It's now open. And really, what's holding you back from going visiting it? They're fantastic products. Just check it out online and be amazed by it. And again, hats off and commend people for doing these things, for creating new businesses and bringing new ideas, new products into our Midlands town. Well done to everybody involved. Stay tuned. I'm going to take a quick break now. After that, we're going to have some updates on some big news items and things that have been happening around the Midlands from a business perspective over the past couple of days. Talk to you shortly. Well, probably no surprise, but the government are still in place. Basically, 85 Tees vote confidence in government, 66th again. So no major surprise there. So the Dáil will eventually go to its summer recess in about 2 weeks' time, and we'll be back at it again in September. Now, if you've got confidence in a Laois business, why not nominate them in the inaugural Laois Business Awards for 2022. There's a range of categories available on laoischamber.ie: Outstanding SME of the Year Award, Large Business of the Year Award, Startup Emerging New Business of the Year Award, Business Supporting Community, Excellence in Tourism and Hospitality, Excellence in Retail, Excellence in Innovation, Best Online Presence and Social Media Award, Excellence in Sustainability and Climate Action, Spirit of Laois Award, and Laois Business of the Year Award. The nominations have been open since yesterday, the 11th of July, and you can find out more about those on laoischamber.ie/awards. The nominations are open for all businesses registered in and operating in County Laois, and businesses can be nominated for as many categories as they're eligible for, and they're also allowed to self-nominate too. And the awards will be given out on at a gala dinner and award ceremony at the Heritage in Killinard on Friday the 4th of November. So spread the word and get nominating now for all those fantastic Laois businesses that you feel should get the recognition they deserve. I'm going to flick across now to Mullingar, because it was mooted a few months ago, but a new film studio for a Midlands town has moved a step closer. Westmeath County Council has granted planning permission for the Hammer Lake Studios project in Mullingar, subject to a vote by local councillors. €70 million being invested in the construction of the campus in the Lochshever Corporate Park, with construction estimated to take around 12 months. Junior Minister and Longford Westmeath TD Robert Troy believes it's a huge opportunity for the county and it will lead to significant benefits for the wider community.
And I have no doubt the elected members of Westmeath County Council will see the real benefits of this planning and will approve the planning at their September meeting. This is a significant investment in the town of Mullingar and indeed in the region, and has the potential to bring many, many jobs. So it's a really positive news story.
It is indeed, and again, it's funny how we speak about Mullingar with Denise there from the Sugar Plum Suite, and we talk about movies and famous films, and there's details that a new film studio is moving closer to fruition there in Mullingar too. Well done to everybody involved, and again, very innovative approach to stuff. Press release that I got, it was embargoed until this evening around 6, or until today, but basically exports by Enterprise Ireland by companies have increased by 12% to a record level in 2021. It was the highest ever level of growth for EI-backed companies in export value. Exports grew across all territories, with exports to the Eurozone up by 10%. Enterprise Ireland clients in the last year contributed €31 billion to the domestic economy, and a record investment of €1.36 billion in research and development by Enterprise Ireland-backed clients was also noted and recognised. Well done to everybody involved there. And again, just to commend the role that Enterprise Ireland plays across the Midlands too. Similar can be said for IDA Ireland. Their half-year foreign direct investment results are the highest ever. The IDA Ireland, the inward investment agency of the Irish government, has reported significant investment growth in the first half of 2022, returning FDI employment creation plans to above the pre-pandemic 2019 record levels, despite a continuing challenging global environment. 155 investments were won, with associated employment potential of over 18,000 jobs. 73 were new name investments, and 73 of the 155 investments went to regional locations. So it goes to show there is huge work being done. And you know, sometimes when we give out about, or people give out about, the ministerial trips all across the world for St. Patrick's Day or whatever, that's what happens. That's a lot of what happens from Enterprise Ireland IDA is on the back of that. And maybe they're a necessary evil. They are a necessary evil, and they are very worth pursuing too. That's just my view. Thank you for getting in touch this evening as well, and for so many words of support for David Feely, who's taken over the running of Tommy Clark's Barbers, a business that's 170 years in operation. Thanks too to Philip Kelly of D&G Kelly Duncan in Tullamore for his insights on the property market, and congratulations to him and his team on their recent national award. And a huge thank you too to Denise Buckley from Sugar Plum Sweetery in Mullingar. Again, that type of business story that just warms the heart to hear people just spotting a gap, going for something and doing it to the nth degree, and their story is only beginning there too, and I look forward to hearing so much more on that. If you want to hear more of Taking Care of Business, go on to midlands103.com, the listen back section, click on the podcast link. All the podcasts of the shows are now going up on the regular podcasting channels as well, which is fantastic. Makes it even easier to listen back to this evening's shows and to all the older shows as well. That's it from me. I'll talk to you all next week. Joe Cooney is here after News at 8 with Country Roads. Stay safe. Have a great week. Talk to you all soon.
Taking Care of Business returns next Tuesday at 7 p.m. with the local enterprise offices of Leash, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business. Midlands 103.